And hello from the campus of Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We welcome you to the Software Engineering Institute's webinar series. Our presentation today is Culture Shock, Unlocking DevOps Through Collaboration and Communication. Depending on your location, we wish you a good morning, a good afternoon, or good evening. My name is Shane McGraw. I'll be your moderator for the presentation, and I'd like to thank you for attending. We want to make today as interactive as possible, so we will address questions throughout the presentation and again at the end of the presentation. You can submit your questions to our event staff at any time by using the Questions tab on your control panel. We will also ask a few polling questions throughout the presentation. They will appear as a pop-up window on your screen. The first polling question we'd like to ask is, how did you hear of today's event? Another three tabs I'd like to point out are the Files, Twitter, and Survey tabs. The Files tab has a PDF copy of the presentation slides there now, along with other DevOps-related work from the SEI. For those of you using Twitter, be sure to follow at SEI News and use the hashtag SEI Webinar. The File tab you can open up by the end of the presentation, and we hope you fill out as your feedback is always greatly appreciated. Now I'd like to introduce our presenters for today. Todd Waits is a project lead at the SEI with a background in entertainment industries and entrepreneurship. Todd provides a unique perspective to help improve workflows and processes with innovative technology solutions. He helps law enforcement and government agencies embrace modern technologies and development methodologies. Aaron Volkman is a senior research engineer within the CERT division at the SEI. He specializes in product and research-driven development. Since 2003, he has helped numerous organizations in the government, as well as healthcare, retail, software, and manufacturing industries meet their business objectives through technology. He holds a master's in computer information systems from Boston University. And now I'd like to turn it over to Todd Waits. Todd, welcome. All yours.
Thanks so much, Shane. We're really excited to be able to speak to you guys today about DevOps and culture, collaboration, communication issues. Before we get started going into the communication collaboration piece, we wanted to give a brief overview of where DevOps came from to give an idea about why there may be some of these culture issues that we're facing. So to get started, we want to talk about Waterfall. So Waterfall methodology was kind of the original software methodology. It mapped really well to the business models that people were using. You had very clear functions and timelines and roles, and one led right into the other. However, that ran into problems as requirements would change, and it's a complicated system with a lot of moving parts. So we started using iterative cycles, so the most prominent of that being Agile. Agile was around to bring the customer closer into the development process so that we could focus on building what customers actually need. So we made sure key stakeholders are a part of that iterative process to generate a product that everyone could use.
So as enterprises started integrating our Agile, what we started seeing in reality is water, scrum, fall, where we have development in the center, iterating, doing their daily stand-ups, and releasing vertical slices of functionality into production. But at the top, we have the business who's forced to plan out everything, forecast the whole fiscal year in advance, how much money they're going to spend, how many team members they must have. And then at the bottom, we have QA and operations with a centralized quality assurance team that must integrate everything together with all the existing systems in production, test everything out, and then transition it to operations so that it can be released into production. So there is sort of a disconnect here. And that's where DevOps comes in. Sort of like how Agile sought to bring the customer closer to the development process to assure that we're developing what the customer really needs on a schedule that they need. DevOps seeks to align development and operations. So through aligning developments and operations and security along business needs through shared goals, giving them all the shared goals through collaboration. We have DevOps that seeks to accelerate developing software with quality as quickly as possible.
I think one of the foundations I really like about the DevOps ideas is the collaboration piece. Really, if you're just getting started trying to implement DevOps, whether you're a large shop or a small shop, the key point here is the communication. Initially, it may start with just opening your mouth and communicating with another side of the fence there, talking between dev and operations, making sure everybody's on the same page.
Okay, so we're going to jump in here, folks. We're going to ask, like as I mentioned during the intro, we're going to ask some polling questions throughout the presentation to kind of help us drive the flow of the presentation. So the first one we're going to pose here is, did you watch our previous DevOps webinar by Hassan Yassar and Aaron Coyce? And that was titled, What DevOps Is Not. That'll give us an idea of who was in the audience. So we'll give you about 15 seconds or so to vote there. And while you guys are voting, wanted to let everyone know, based on some feedback we got from the last webinar, we decided to start a DevOps forum on LinkedIn. So we invite you all to join that forum. If you have a LinkedIn profile, just go to LinkedIn. Within groups, you can search on DevOps, and you'll see that forum. And we invite you to keep the conversation going after the webinar there. So we will show the results here for our question. We had 74% no and 26% yes. So may have to cover some of the basics again. Todd, so back to you.
Excellent. Well, thank you all for joining. Those who didn't get to catch the last webinar, thanks for joining us today.
So next we're going to describe what we feel like some of the attributes of a DevOps culture. First, it's a no-blame culture. We have no time or energy to have blame and emotion brought. We have to focus on getting the job done. Things always go wrong. Whenever they go wrong, we have to focus on fixing the problem and identifying what went wrong so that it does not happen again. Part of a no-blame culture is also creating a culture where we're willing to take risks. And in fact, we get close to the edge of risk-taking with proper risk mitigation so that we can properly innovate and push the envelope of what we're doing with technology. If we're in a blame culture, then technologists are going to be afraid to take risks and, you know, create good innovation.
That's right. In order to be able to take proper risks, we also then have to have proper transparency for the organization. That is one thing that helps in avoiding a blame culture, is to providing as much information and transparency as possible into the process and into the artifacts themselves. That transparency, ways to achieve that are using tooling such as issue trackers and documentation. And it can be as basic as opening your mouth and talking with other people, making sure that the necessary meetings are occurring and that there's awareness through the use of the automated tooling and whatnot that can present the results and present a well-defined picture of the current status of a project.
Right. Empire building within an organization helps no one but whoever's building an empire and is to the detriment of the organization overall. Next, another characteristic is a passion for waste reduction. Just like Toyota Production Systems identifying 7 areas of waste, you can check out our LinkedIn group to learn more about this after the presentation. But what I would like to just hit on is overproduction, where we release too many features than what the customer can consume. This is a type of waste because if we release things that the customer is not going to use, we don't know if by the time they're able to use it, if that's really what they need at the time. So that's a very big type of waste. Another type of waste is inventory, where we have too many works in progress sitting around that represent risk once they're started. If they're just sitting around, they represent risk due to QA cost, the cost of starting those initiatives up again, and the changes if they're left to sit on the shelf for a long period of time. Perhaps in DevOps, the biggest source of waste is unused creativity. If your entire team is consumed with putting out fires all the time, then they aren't going to have time to use their creativity in order to improve processes that lead to better outcomes.
I think a lot of times you'll find that that the people that are closest to that work, they while they are putting out those fires, they're also identifying a lot of ways that they can resolve those fires so that they don't those problems don't occur in the future. Sometimes we as managers or leads will look at these problems and try to institute what we think is the best solution. And it's important to take a step back and realize that we're here to support those people that are actually doing the work and let them recommend and guide what potential solutions will be.
Right. Fostering a non-toxic environment where everybody's comfortable sending up their feedback on how to improve processes.
Absolutely.
Another aspect is making sure that goals and objectives are aligned with business needs. This is very closely related to org structure, where the organization has non-conflicting priorities. This goes with pulling development and operation resources to make sure that in order to get a job done, everybody is tasked appropriately to be able to get that job done on time. I think this also carries over to making sure that business needs are aligned and businesses properly utilize their IT organization so that a manager over here and a manager over there aren't competing for IT resources that could throw an initiative off track on the IT side of the house.
I think an extension of the aligning goals and objectives is the idea of integrating efforts. So as Aaron mentioned before, where Agile was bringing the customer into the development process, DevOps is focused on bringing operations and all of the pertinent individuals that have the information needed to deliver business value into the process. So we need to work to ensure that all those people that are needed are integrated and feel as part of a team and not isolated silos across spread about the organization, but have those aligned efforts and also are integrated, know each other, and are working together as a team.
Okay, so this is going to lead us to our third polling question, and that question is, do you want more concrete examples of DevOps culture? Again, do you want more concrete examples of DevOps culture? So we'll give you about 15 or 20 seconds to vote there. While you're doing that, we had a couple questions come in from our last polling question where we asked if you had watched the last DevOps webinar and where to find that. The easiest thing to do is if you just email info@sei.cmu.edu, we'll send you the location. You can watch the archive of that recording. Also, a couple questions on where to get today's presentation slides. In case you missed the intro, they are available now in the Files tab. You can walk away with that and other resources related to DevOps today. And, of course, this presentation is being archived. And we'll send out an email at the end of, most likely by tomorrow morning, with the location for that. So let's share the results from this one. And we got 86% saying yes, they want more concrete examples. So there's your challenge. Can we work more examples in throughout the presentation?
Yes, I think we'll try to focus on getting some more concrete examples. Okay. That's excellent. Thank you. Also, just wanted to mention that we can put some of these links into our LinkedIn group so that those who are participating in discussion on LinkedIn can have access to those resources as well. All right.
So we'd like to talk about what DevOps is not, since this is all about communication and collaboration. So DevOps is not just containers. DevOps is not just infrastructure as code. DevOps is not just continuous integration, continuous delivery. DevOps is people.
A lot of times as we talk about DevOps, the tooling is kind of, it is a cornerstone of DevOps. But sometimes we can get so focused on what tools are we using that we often forget that without the people, DevOps really falls apart. So I find myself feeling a little bit like Charlton Heston and Soylent Green saying, DevOps is people, and feeling like a madman at times. But
Sometimes the tools are a lot more fun than the people to deal with, so it's very tempting to get caught up in the tooling.
Yeah, it's As far as DevOps being people, what's important to remember here is that with that it's about the communication, that being able to work, if developers are working in an isolated silo and they package something up and they pass that on to the operations team, there's this vacuum where it's there's just this artifact that's passed back and forth. And so what that can generally do is create grumble pits at best, in the sense that once operations gets this packaged piece, they get all frustrated because the developers didn't implement something right, or, you know, oh man, they just don't know what they're doing. And the converse is true. When developers get information from operations, they just say, ah, these guys, these people just, they don't understand what we're going through and what we have to do.
Send it back. Send it back. We can't take this. We can't run this.
Exactly.
Causing the developers to disappoint their business customers, missing deadlines,
right,
things like that. So a lot of animosity can form between these groups, especially when they don't work closely together.
Right. That's one of those issues with misaligned business goals and objectives. Developer's goal is to introduce change and new features, and the operations goal is to maintain stasis and keep the applications running smoothly. There was a study done at McGill University in Montreal by Professor Jeffrey Mogill. And this experiment was to measure stress and empathy that people have toward strangers and to also toward people that they know well. And what was found, which isn't really surprising, but is nice to have documented in a research environment, is that we have a great deal of empathy toward people that we know, that we can see face-to-face, that we can interact with.
And people that don't stress you out.
Exactly. And so when you introduce those competing goals and objectives, that introduces stress, which will then decrease empathy that we have between people. And we often find ourselves blaming the other group for the shortcomings of whatever process. And so what the study found was that if you just introduce 15 minutes of a shared experience. In this experiment, they used Rock Band, and they had strangers play Rock Band together for 15 minutes and then proceeded to do this experiment. After the experiment, the results of the experiment said that the strangers, after they played Rock Band, they exhibited almost the same amount of empathy that people who knew each other previously exhibited, because they were able to share that experience.
Right. And so getting people familiar with each other, an anecdote from a colleague here at the SEI was quipping whenever we were sharing this research was, they tried lunches, that didn't work. They tried pizza parties, that didn't work. They tried after work socials to try to get different teams together, that didn't work. What they ended up playing was Network Doom Deathmatch, and that ended up bringing the teams closer together and was successful. So I think it's along the same vein.
Yeah, introducing some non-stressful areas to just going to lunch, or sometimes a lot of what happens is that people just devolve into pre-existing cliques. So your operations people will come to lunch with the developers, and they all sit with the developers sit with the developers, and operations sit with operations. So we don't want to do things that are going to further engender these cliques. We want to do things that will present low-stress activities that will increase empathy and interaction between one another. I find a lot of times it happens is I'll submit a request to IT, and I'm much more empathetic and responsive once I've actually met the person that's fulfilling that request. It becomes a lot less, these people don't respond, and more, okay, yeah, we understand where they're coming from.
Right, right.
Can we work in audience questions related to this topic here now?
Okay.
Damon wants to know, what are some organizational barriers that you have seen impeding DevOps from becoming into an organization?
That's a good question. I think we're going to hit on that when we talk about some organizational structure.
Okay.
But I think we can just mention that right now, is that organizational structure can be broken down in ways that can inhibit the ability to gamefully discuss some of these issues that may be because of those competing objectives.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we want to go into more detail now.
I think competing priorities, groups wanting to do things the way mm-hmm. they always have, that sort of thing, whenever org structure prevents that from happening, whenever there isn't just one leader sort of encouraging or fostering an environment where everybody can do things using a new philosophy.
Okay, back to you guys.
All right, so we have all this talk about DevOps as people, but we do want to make it very clear that people use tools.
Yeah, let's face it. We've got to use the tools.
Absolutely.
If you take warning organizations out there, if you don't use some of these tools, then you're very far behind. And I don't know if I'd want to work with you, or I'd work with you to implement some of these tools. But just like money, they say money can't buy you happiness. Well, it sure helps. And the tools by themselves aren't going to give you help you implement DevOps, but they sure help a lot. If you don't use tools like this, you're going to have suboptimal results at best, because DevOps is all about automation.
I think one thing that we kind of failed to mention in our previous discussion when we were talking about people is this idea that, you know, even you can start down the path of implementing DevOps without starting to implement these tools right away. And that is by opening up that communication, by sitting down and saying, hey, here's some of the problems that we're facing as an organization to meet our business needs, and starting the conversation to see how that can work. And as you go about increasing that collaboration, we can introduce these tools to a greater degree, to greater effect, in order to get DevOps working.
Yeah, so a one-man shop or a small startup where everybody's sitting in the same room, they, by their very nature, are DevOps.
Right.
But they're getting suboptimal results if they're not using a lot of these automation tools.
So the tooling, what it gets us, again, by itself, not as important, but when used in a DevOps context, it gives us this global vision. And so where we have a repository of the state of the application, kind of this persistent history of where the application came from, how did it get started. We have insight into what's the current state of the application, and even through our issue trackers, our wiki, we can project into the future to see what will our application be in the future. And so it gives this kind of 360 vision of where we're at with the application. The automated testing, the builds, they give us the instant feedback and notifications of what's going on so that people can react and respond in an on-demand sort of way.
I think another thing that related to global vision is through using all this automation, you can have all the data stored about your processes stored in a data store to enable easy auditing, so that you can go back and look in the past and know exactly what happened when. So any organizations that must maintain SOX or PCI compliance, this is right up your alley to use automation tools that store this data. They also, just to touch on a couple of points, they free up humans' time so that we're not doing things manually and we have more time to innovate.
Right.
They reduce error because we have a well-oiled machine performing a task hundreds of times, maybe, over and over again. And they just speed up everything, which is, you know, what one of our goals is to
right.
speed delivery of quality software into production where it can give business value.
For example, if you're deploying to your staging environment once every quarter to do your tests, then you have that number of times to determine how successful you're going to be when you go to production.
Yeah, the whole muscle memory
exactly.
metaphor.
And if you're deploying 1,000 times a week to your staging environment, well, then you're going to have that much more confidence that when you want to go to production, it's going to work, because we have that historical record saying that, hey, we've worked 995 times out of 1,000, we're going to work when we get into production.
Right, right.
The other thing that we introduce here, that we put into this global vision, is our documentation. A lot of people are documenting in their source code, but we took this a step forward because, again, going back to the comment that we made earlier about the people closest to the work being able to be the ones who drive change to process, one of the things we noticed as we were working with our customers is that our requirements documentation and our design documentation was constantly a sore spot. We spent more of our time either finding the right version of a document, correcting issues because nobody had the latest, somebody lost the last updates, and so we had a poor document management system going on. What we decided to do and what worked for our team was to put our documentation into our source code repositories. By putting it into our source code repositories, we can rely on the same rigorous testing that our code goes through. And so our documents are checked in and built by our build server and then deployed into an intranet site that is then exposed to managers, stakeholders, customers, and they're able to always access the most current version. And we're even able to tag build numbers with specific versions of documents, so we can always roll back and go to specific versions and see what the history of that document was, so we can find out, well, where, how did we get here?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the idea that as you're working in this, you as your team can identify areas that are important for you to put into this idea of what needs to be communicated and transparent for all the stakeholders involved. And you may start with just one thing. It may just be a build server. And then you may be doing your testing. You can start small and build on that as works for the organization.
Right. Instead of having people respond to help tickets and put out fires all the time, they're working on building capabilities that mm-hmm. then just give value in economies of scale as time goes on. And that's the kind of thing that we like to focus on.
Okay, that's going to lead us to our fourth polling question here. Give me a second to pose here. And that is going to be, do you want additional insight into how tools can help increase communication and collaboration? So while we were voting on that, folks, and again, if that's not something of interest or if it's felt well covered, feel free to vote no. We move on, but we want to make sure you get the information you need there. So let's get a quick question in while people are voting. And some of this stuff you had covered, but people coming okay. and going, so if it's a repeat question, we can go through it rather quickly.
Oh, that's great.
But from Andrew asking, what is the major difference between Agile and DevOps? Right now, it seems very similar to the Agile environment that I am in.
I agree. I think for us, we see DevOps as extending Agile and formalizing the integrations with other teams and organizations. It's also highly focused on the deployment aspect. The idea of, developers' definition of done doesn't just include, hey, it works here, it works in testing. It means it's working in production.
Right. Yeah, so it's taking Agile and enveloping it so that operations is now Agile. Security is now Agile.
Mm-hmm.
It's giving agility to a wider, broad scope than just getting done with sprints and being able to say, okay, we released this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think focusing on that implementation and extension of it.
Again, we had a follow-up question asking about the location of the previous webinar. Easiest thing to do at this point is just email info@sei.cmu.edu, and we can give you that location. Again, a couple questions about where to find the slides for this presentation. If you just look down to the Files tab, you'll see all that information there now. So let's work in one more question, guys, if you don't mind.
No, not at all.
From Rodney asking, What are some common mistakes organizations make when implementing DevOps? Common mistakes.
Maybe throwing up new silos. We're going to talk about this a little bit later on, but I think forming DevOps groups that then form new silos and create new walls and barriers is a big mistake that organizations make.
I think also the top-down approach. You can't make this change by fiat, by force. It has to be something that everybody buys into. It needs to be supported from the top, but it really happens from the people closest to the work. So if the people closest to the work are implementing this and they have the support from the people on top, then it will happen. But if either one isn't really supporting it, it will fail.
Yeah, I think because every organization is unique and every group within an organization, every little business area, every right. Technology group, each of them are snowflakes. And what works for a web team using the latest and greatest hipster tools to get their jobs done, if we take what they're doing and you try to scale that out across your enterprise and they reach a mainframe or another legacy system, then that scaling is going to fail because it has to be implemented in a unique right. way between those two groups, depending.
Okay, so we had the results from our question. About 71% saying yes, we'd like a little more additional okay. insight, and 29% no. So if okay. we can work that in as well.
Well, we can yeah. give an example of one
yeah,
of one other thing. We have a couple slides prepared for that we could do. Okay, so one term that's been coming up over the past few years is this idea of chat ops. And What you see here is just a sample of a chat window. At the very least, what ChatOps is notifications. The idea is that we're using the chat room or communication tools as a means to drive, to bring awareness to the development effort. And by awareness, I don't mean to necessarily outside stakeholders, but definitely all the people that are involved with the development itself. I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add here or... Okay, so with this example is actually pulled from something that happened to me this week. Is I did a build for a customer. We have to utilize an air gap solution to deliver one of the pieces of software that we build, and I delivered the build and received this notification.
You're about to deliver the build.
And I was about to deliver the build, and I saw that it said the test configuration. And so I realized that I was actually packaging the wrong build, that I triggered the wrong build. And so I was able to quickly go in, trigger the production build, and release that within 30 minutes, rather than having to, you know, I have this build, I deliver it, and it goes into our production environment and completely fails because it's pointing at all the wrong servers. So this was something that is extremely useful just at a bare minimum, is just making sure that our notifications from build servers are hooked up, that notifications from issue trackers, that source code and issue trackers can be integrated, things like that. And we can get those notifications of completion, of test results and things like that directly in the chat window. It reduces some of the context switching. We'll get into that in just a second.
Yeah, and I think the magic words here are real time. Mm-hmm. It shifts these notifications to a real time instead of an email or checking someplace to receive this information.
So, for example, one of the other scenarios that we had last week was Aaron and I discussing an issue that we had with some of our front-end CSS and a scroll bar or a div not scrolling correctly. And so from the chat window, I'm able to create a new case using our dev bot. So this is kind of a more sophisticated way to approach ChatOps, is introducing bots into your chat environment. And so directly from that chat window, within the context of our conversation, I'm able to create a new case, and then with that, show that I've started to work on that. So Aaron knows that I'm solving something. It's recorded into our issue tracker, which means that other people have transparency and visibility into the work that is getting done and happening.
Yeah, I was very skeptical about, you know, if this would be worthwhile, or you know, why bother writing a bot to be able to issue command lines from a chat window whenever, you know, I could just alt tab over into a web interface to create a ticket. But you know, I've seen that this creates a real time stream of consciousness amongst the development group, especially when there's, you know, many more developers mm-hmm. at play, so that everybody knows what everybody's doing in real time. You don't have to go into an issue tracker and run a report to get this information. It's right under your nose in your chat window in a chat room. And I think by letting everybody know what everybody's doing, if somebody's like going ahead and addressing something, then it reduces waste because that information gets to all the players in real time.
I think it's also fun because it becomes this a communal command line for the development team with their tools. A nice thing that it can be used as is it can also be used nicely as an onboarding technique to introduce somebody's skill set, to introduce somebody new, and expose them to all of your tooling.
Right,
because they can help write plugins to it and figure out, oh, well, this is how all these systems work together.
Right, and they're watching everybody else work mm-hmm. because they're in the shared virtual space.
Yeah, that's been very successful for our team. Okay, so the last part that we really want to get into is just this idea that you can't buy DevOps.
Right. Every organization's unique. Every group's unique within an organization. And you can't just buy some canned solution and try to implement it. You know, that change has to come from within because it's your organization's people who know the most about how your systems work and what it would take to transform areas so things get done in a different, new way. We see developers remaining expert developers and operations engineers remaining experts at what they do. But perhaps within those teams, if we can have intermixed teams with devs and ops within the same team, that's wonderful. If that's not possible, then maybe cross-train people to become generalists, to serve as ambassadors to reach across the aisle to the other side so that we get that sharing of information.
Yeah, I really like the idea of being able to, again, by understanding a little bit of what other people are going through, it creates that shared understanding. It increases empathy in the stressful times.
Right, and also so that each side's aware of what to expect from the other side and be aware of their expectations, their constraints, and to be able to work together better.
A lot of what we see now is we see on a lot of the job boards is this DevOps engineer.
Right. If you go over to Stack Overflow careers and search for DevOps, you'll see tons and tons of job openings for DevOps engineer.
It's kind of a contested position because it's difficult to say whether the DevOps engineer is a developer with sysadmin background or if they're a sysadmin with a little bit of understanding of coding development practices. The way that we've started to look at it is more of a role that it becomes like a Scrum Master, whereas Scrum Master is a role within Agile Scrum implementation that ensures that the methodology is followed precisely. A DevOps engineer could be a role that ensures that DevOps practices are followed properly from a technical standpoint, somebody that can help and train groups and bring awareness.
Right, I see them bringing continuous integration, continuous mm-hmm. deployment, setting up those systems in an organization, assisting with maybe converting existing projects, re-architecting existing projects so that they can take advantage of automation technologies, as well as maybe set standards for future development so that it can take so that those projects can take advantage of new automation tool sets that you might be using. We see this person as an agent of change within the organization to change what's already there, not really to create their own silo and be a service provider.
Yeah, it's important, again, that we're integrating everybody, that everybody is a part of the same team with aligned business goals and objectives. So to bring in a DevOps engineer and just say, no, your job is still to develop, your job is still to make sure that operationally our applications maintain, and your job is to implement.
Yeah, submit a ticket to the DevOps engineer to get your project into continuous integration.
Yeah, that ends up causing a lot more pain than it's worth.
Right, we're trying to create a capability within an organization. So it's really hard to talk about DevOps without talking about shifting left. We say it all the time. So what we mean by shifting left, here you see we have a project timeline as it goes from dev all the way through to prod. And typically, before we started thinking about DevOps in many organizations, the ops team's concerns only came into play once we're ready to step into the production environment. This goes for different types of testing, operational acceptance testing, testing the failover, maybe even looking at security stuff right there at the end. But through shifting left, we're going to be including these concerns about the operations team, perhaps security, earlier in the process to lead to better outcomes. This has to do with testing. Stuff like what ports are open, for a really simple example, mm-hmm. how much disk space will we need? What version of the operating system does this have to rely on? When I think this becomes even more, this is a big deal for the government, sort of to prevent a healthcare.gov type situation where we have many contractors developing units together, and then only whenever we're ready to go to production did we integrate everything together to test it and lead to a very costly failure. But if we could shift left those concerns, then we could take care of those concerns up front and avoid those types of mishaps.
Yeah, by including those integration testing and operational testing at the beginning, we can be building toward that, toward success.
Right, right. And just to underline again, a system should be built with security in mind mm-hmm. from the start. So I know we're talking about development and operations, but this also includes security.
Right.
Security should be at the forefront of thinking about a project from its beginning.
The DevOps really came out of the idea of bringing development and operations together, but that's just part of the story. It's really any organization or group that may have an impact on that final product, make sure that they're brought in early in the process. A couple of anecdotes from my experience here that this shift left process has really come into play was one was for our export control things that we have to do. We have to make sure that we go through a legal process whenever we're releasing a tool to one of our sponsors. And initially, we would be releasing that tool, and suddenly, wait, no, you cannot release this tool until it goes through legal and gets the proper markings on it so that it can be released properly. And so as we got experience with that, we're able to involve our export control group earlier on in the process to make sure that we're taking care of that. So by the time we hit our deadline, we don't suddenly have a delay of 2 months while it goes through review and control policies. Similarly, one of the sponsors we were, you know, let me share a different example. So in the past, I've worked with other organizations where we're building a system for them, and when we go in to integrate it, suddenly their operations groups aren't prepared for us to put that in. And so we've been collaborating with the stakeholders in that organization, but not necessarily involving all the key stakeholders from the organization that are impacted by us deploying. And that was an oversight on our part. Once we made the switch to making sure whenever we instigated or started a relationship with somebody, with a customer in that company, we were able to involve the IT and operations group from the beginning. And that way, they didn't feel as if their toes were being stepped on or that we were overreaching our bounds or trying to dictate how they should do their job. They had the proper input that they needed to have. And rightly so, they were upset that we were just coming in and saying, here's this thing, deploy it.
Right.
We were able to have that and ease that process of transition when working with outside, you know, as a contractor working with outside groups.
Right. So by shifting left, it would buy us months to let these sort of relationships mm-hmm. work themselves
right.
out instead of at the 19th hour whenever, you know, we're ready to meet our deadline.
Right. And then suddenly we deploy and nobody's ready to actually receive it. And so that was a big mm-hmm. success of implementing a DevOps approach to this.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked a little about organizational structure earlier. We want to go into that in a little bit more detail. So here we have, again, that top-down approach. Traditionally, we have organizations that have been split along functional teams. So we have a director with a developer manager and operations manager. The developer manager, his goal and his primary goal and objective is to, again, introduce new features that customers are going to be wanting to use, working with business analysts to make sure that we're getting the right things in there, and introducing change. And the operations manager almost has the exact opposite goal, where his goal is to make sure stability is the primary factor in any development project. And so development naturally introduces instability, and operations naturally reduces instability.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is looking at how organizing our teams along functional lines can create these divides.
Yeah, I think a big danger here, I think, is misaligned priorities.
Yeah. Yes.
There is a data warehouse manager that I'm friends with, I worked with in the past, who worked on the operations side, and he said he felt like a short order cook.
Mm-hmm.
Every time his phone rang, there was another request from the business asking for something new. So his team, his operations folks, would be pulled in to fix the squeakiest wheel.
Right.
So even if they were embedded in a development team, they'd be pulled off of that development project in order to, you know, work on break fix, put out fires, satisfy immediate demands. So that's one of the big pitfalls that we see, you know, with an org structure that looks like this, because we have the danger of that sort of thing happening.
So one of the things we like to see is when we can organize groups from a bottom-up direction, where we have our teams organized around products, around initiatives. And the leadership on the bottom is there to support the work that's being done. Everybody's there to support the delivery of business value, as opposed to my job is to deliver this new feature. My job is to deliver value to the customer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in this kind of org structure, everybody in one of those columns is all rowing the boat towards the same goal. They all have the same leader who is making sure that that happens,
right,
and is able to balance out conflicting priorities to avoid conflicts from happening, to assure that everything happens on time when it needs to.
And a lot of times, I know that we're putting this up here, and so I can anticipate that some people are saying it is not realistic for us to implement a brand new organizational structure in our company, in our group. We understand that.
Right.
And so going back to what Aaron was talking about in the previous slide is that the important thing is that can we align our incentives and our priorities along these types of lanes so that they're aligned by initiatives and projects rather than by the function of the person.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So...
Perhaps in the future, Gene Kim, was just to quote him, he was saying in the future, we'll always have centralized operations teams. And if they don't look like this on the screen, and if they are all together under one manager, then instead of responding to request tickets to do little chunks of work, what they should be spending their time doing is building automated capabilities to provide their users with self-serve capabilities. So if you need a virtual machine, build a capability so that the devs can ask for it themselves or the business can request it themselves.
Right.
That's where we see the future of centralized IT going. You know, just they're still there, but shifting the type of work they do from, you know, doing things manually to building capabilities that provide economies of scale, so that, you know, doing these types of things that happen manually in the past can happen automatically with very little human labor.
Right. And there's a lot of tools out there that can do a lot of that. You know, speaking of provisioning virtual machines on demand by just setting a few parameters and hitting go, you can have a working virtual machine without any human intervention already.
Mm-hmm.
And so that type of thing can be extremely helpful to development process and can also provide a standardization, because that way you don't have people that are doing one-off virtual machines and perhaps introducing security vulnerabilities into the workflow.
Right, inconsistencies.
Exactly.
That sort of thing.
Exactly.
Okay, so this is going to get us to our fifth and final polling question of the day, folks. We'll pose that now. We'd like to know, do you want further explanation on how to facilitate DevOps if you cannot change organizational structure? So while we're voting on that, let's dive back into a question. A little bit of a longer one here from Steve, but wanting to know, developers supporting operations invariably encounter operators' unanticipated issues or uses of a delivered system. How can these be communicated with the program without being seen as defects, deficiencies, / blame in either the development or the requirements processes, especially by those middle managers so very, very heavily invested in the successes of those past processes?
That's a very good question.
You need a repeat, or were you able to gather all that?
I think I'm good.
Go for it.
So I think in some ways we have, I'm going to repeat it and hopefully I get the gist of it. So the idea that we have things that are being reported as bugs or deficiencies, but that they may just be people using the application in an unexpected way, which isn't necessarily bad, it's not necessarily good, it's just unexpected. And so how do we communicate, hey, there's this unexpected use going on in a way that doesn't say, you fouled up, you've messed it all up.
That sounds correct.
Okay, so I think that goes back again to unified goals and objectives. If we have an integrated team that has their priorities aligned, then we can communicate in a way that doesn't, it's not wielding a hammer. It's just notifying, hey, we're seeing this type of activity. Our goal is that we're delivering business value. So if we have a piece of our application that's not meeting the business value, then our job's not done yet. And so it's not that you've done it wrong or you've made a mistake. It's couching it in a form of, we have to continue. We're just not finished yet. And so let's keep iterating at it. Let's add this to the next iteration and do better this next time. And we can kind of patch these holes and fix this.
Mm-hmm. I think the idea of up-to-date documentation mm-hmm. would also aid this, where information is shared and available through automated systems.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Okay, so let's share our results. I think we know what the answer is going to be.
Yeah.
We have a 69% yes and 31% no. So can we dive into some further explanation there?
Absolutely. I think for us, understanding that culture change is hard, that it's regardless of whether you can easily shift your organization around or not, culture change is going to be a difficult thing to make happen. And so one of the things we can do is to look at how can we justify the use of some of these methodologies.
Right. It's all about convincing top leadership, C-level leadership, to come along with this. One way that I've seen organizations do this is by creating sort of a skunk works team, carve off a little project with a team of that's organized in this new way, using new processes, tools, and technologies, and gathering data to prove that this can, data that shows that there is a benefit to doing things with a DevOps philosophy in mind.
I think as far as the data goes, it's important to remember that if you're not tracking anything, you should start. It doesn't really matter at this point what you start tracking, but just start tracking something, whether it's number of cases resolved, whether it's time to go to production from initial build. Any kinds of these metrics that we can show, hey, look, we went from resolving 15 cases a week to resolving 40 cases a week, or we reduced time to deployment by 3 months.
Right. I think, like, go for the low-hanging fruit.
Absolutely.
Because any data that's real is good data, and I wouldn't stress about trying to find, like, the perfect metric to
right.
demonstrate success, because success can be visible in many unexpected places.
And once you have the metrics, it's difficult to say, well, I don't like this process. Well, you may not like the process, but the results are there. And so whether we like doing a culture change, whether we like implementing new things in the organization, we see the return on that investment very clearly. And the more that we can document that and show that, then the more success we'll have gaining new followers, new adherence to the new methodology.
Mm-hmm. Another aspect is there's lots of published research out there showing that, you know, these things do work. Gartner said these things work, they're mainstream, they're here to stay. Gartner research said by 2016, 25% of the global 2,000 organizations will have implemented DevOps within their organization. Computer Associates commissioned a study that says participants said they had a 19% increase in revenue, a 19% increase in quality and performance, and a 21% reduction in time doing rework and fixing bugs whenever they implemented DevOps philosophies. Puppet Labs' 2014 State of DevOps poll showed that companies reported they doubled their successful change rate. They increased their lead times by 8,000%, and they said they felt that they were two times as likely to exceed in profit, market share, and productivity goals. So if you were a C-level leader, could you think if implementing DevOps philosophies in your organization, if there's research out there saying that it can do this,
right.
Should there be a higher priority for you?
No. I think also if we look at organizational barriers, a lot of times one of the things that we started doing was providing kind of a tech exchange type lunch where we were able to present on new technologies or just interesting things that we saw in the development field. It allowed us to start getting a handle on what was happening in the community while maintaining our skills while interacting with each other in a very informal setting. We were able to show and build trust with one another that we're all out there building skills. We're all out there finding, you know, what's really going to help improve our state of practice and the state of practice in the community at large.
So that's what we should do until we purchase the whole Rock Band set to build trust.
Right. So if you can't bring Rock Band to an organization, at least you can start sharing knowledge back and forth and creating these informal, low-stress environments that can build trust amongst everybody. I found that that's helped a tremendous amount for us building that trust with one another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's it. We're on to our Q&A. So before we dive into our final Q&A with Aaron and Todd, just a couple housekeeping items. A couple questions come in asking where a replay can be found or where they can watch the archive. So people are ready for an encore already. So you guys must have did something right.
Awesome.
The file, most likely the archive, will be up at some point tomorrow. And you just use the same login credentials that you used to register today. So you just go back to the same URL and log in. And the archive, like I said, will be up some point tomorrow, most likely, if not, definitely by Monday, and you'll get an email with that location. A couple people, again, asking about slides. They're in the file tab. You can walk away with that, along with other work on DevOps from the SEI workshops, training, processes, things of that nature. Again, one more plea, too. A lot of questions that we'll get into here in a second. If we have about 5 minutes left. If we don't get to everything, we invite everyone to join the LinkedIn group. The DevOps Forum on LinkedIn. If you have a LinkedIn profile, just go to LinkedIn, search under groups for DevOps Forum, SEI DevOps Forum. Post your questions there. We look to keep this conversation going with you guys there. So let's get into the questions now from Damian asking, what should be the role of enterprise social networks in the DevOps equation?
That's a good question. I think in the same way that we're bringing in transparency and communication collaboration, I think if you're finding that a tool is not being used, it's really important to identify why it's not being used. Does it just not fit into the workflow? What is the actual breakdown that may be happening? I think enterprise social networks can sometimes fit in that. I think either they become successful and everybody's on their Yammer profile talking,
mm-hmm.
or they just kind of languish and wither.
Mm-hmm. I think they're useful to help bring your organization together, especially if you're in a very large organization, mm-hmm. to try to put a name with the face.
Yeah.
And to be familiar, depending on what's on your social network profile, but knowing what the background of everybody and helping. I think it's a transparency thing, mm-hmm. to try to increase the culture of collaboration within your organization, to know something about each other that's, you know, searchable and accessible.
Yeah, and just a place to be able to share those thoughts and to find the common grounds.
Mm-hmm. Okay, before we get to John's question, just a reminder, everyone, as well, to fill out the survey upon exiting, as your feedback is always greatly appreciated. So John wants to know, what's your experience in creating goal and performance alignment across dev, test, and ops, assuming that they are three separate groups? What activities do you perform to ensure the tweaking of the performance management system to reinforce the new behaviors?
I think holding everybody accountable towards deadline dates and things like the number of defects discovered.
I think trying to also look for, as you're going through iterations, is looking for the blame game. If you find things that are being punted back and forth with, hey, this isn't acceptable, and all you see is the back and forth, we can identify those areas as, hey, we can improve this. We can get people seated down, talking to each other, and communicating so that we can understand that when you're handing this over and you're handing it back to ops, it's and operations, when you're working with developers, that you're working together to solve these problems. If all we're seeing is these, again, maintaining silos by passing things back, or artifacts back and forth to just be fixed, the not my job. In DevOps, it is your job. Everybody's job is to make sure that there is functional business value delivered to the customer.
And I think also making sure everybody's assigned to be a member of that team in the performance, mm-hmm. management.
Yes.
I know a lot of organizations where, it's the developers who own that project, and the operations team is merely there to act as a support role or to provide a service. So getting operations as 100 full-fledged team members on a project
right.
and rating their performance that way
yeah.
is a would be a good strategy to rate them that way.
Yeah, because otherwise you run into, again, the not my job. If I'm not being judged on my performance in this team,
mm-hmm.
then it's not my job to perform in this team.
Right, there's no incentive.
I think using, if you want tools to be used in the organization, then it sounds kind of hokey to say this, but they have to be used. You have to show the outputs of those tools in order to have people utilize them. So if people aren't seeing the results of the reviews used or the results of issue tracking highlighted, then they're not necessarily going to use those.
Right. Nobody's going to take their time out to enter some data into a seemingly a black hole that
exactly.
goes nowhere, that's never talked about again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got about a minute left, and we're going to try to squeeze in two questions here.
Whoa.
From Wally asking, how do the actual roles within the development areas and operations change when pursuing DevOps?
I sort of think the roles stay the same. You know, developers remain developers, operations remain operations. Perhaps, certain team members on a development team know a little bit more about what it takes to run yeah. something in production, and operations might pick up some scripting and development
yeah.
practices just so that they can help automate.
I think hopefully you're just talking to different people, to new people. That it's not a whole overhaul on your role in the organization. So me suddenly as a developer, I have to learn everything there is to know about Linux. But it's that I'm now interacting with people, and I have that input in my job, and they have my input in theirs.
Okay, and I think this is more of a tool question. If we can get a quick answer, though, from Rajesh asking, how do you enable close collaboration among globally distributed dev and ops teams across multiple sites?
I think it goes back to transparency and using your communication tools. Everybody should be in a chat room together. You can have individual one-off chats because you don't want to have everybody listening to you talk about your puppy. But if you have one person who's interested in your puppy, well, then go and chat with that person. But everybody in a team should be in a room together, interacting, talking about the product, discussing problems. You'll find surprising sources of solutions that you did not think would come if you're all working there together in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have anything to add?
I
know we don't have much time.
Yeah. I guess I'd just like to add that, nothing beats face-to-face or voice real-time
right.
interactions, and that, you can't replace that with email.
Yeah. I think if you need help, share a desktop. You know, there's plenty of technologies to share your desktop across continents. And so make use of those technologies to talk face-to-face, to show your desktop, show what you're working on, show where you're seeing the problem, and interact with people that way, not just with an email and a screenshot. Really interact with individuals.
Yeah, the big problems with the time zones, and I don't think our research has progressed far enough to be able to help out with that. But
no.
Check out our LinkedIn group and
yeah. well,
for
we
future,
further this,
yeah,
we'll further these discussions there.
Aaron, Todd, great presentation.
Hey,
thank
thanks
you.
So much.
Thank you,
folks.
Thank
that's
you.
All the time we have for today. We want to invite you to the next webinar. It will be May 7th, and that will be using DidFail to analyze flow of sensitive information in sets of Android apps. So again. Thanks for joining us today. Have a great afternoon. Please be sure to fill out our survey.